A drop of oil. The next morning, Calanthe and Zona awoke to feel the breath of Zephyrus ruffling at them, like a hungry pet dog panting and pawing at the bedclothes. When they opened their eyes and sat up, the wind departed. But their instinct, greed, and inborn cunning told them what the signal meant, and they hurried to the rock to await their transport. This time, they were determined to get to the bottom of the mystery of their sister's lover. Psyche was there to welcome them when they were set down in front of the palace. Embracing her fondly, the sisters hid the furious envy they felt at Psyche's good fortune, presenting instead a flurry of solicitous clucking and tutting, accompanied by much head-shaking. "Whatever is the matter, Calanthe?" a puzzled Psyche asked, as she sat them down to a great breakfast of fruit, cakes, and honey wine. "Why so sorrowful, Zona? Are you not happy to see me?"
"Happy!" groaned Calanthe.
"If only!"
Zona sighed. "What can be worrying you?"
"Ah, child, child!" said Calanthe with a moan. "You are so young, so sweet, so guileless, so easy to take advantage of. I don't understand."
The sisters looked at each other as if weighing up whether to reveal harsh truths.
"How well, if at all, do you know this thing that comes nightly to visit you?"
"He's not a thing!" protested Psyche. "Of course he's a thing. He's the monster foretold by the oracle."
"Scaly, I'll bet," said Zona. "Or if not scaly, hairy."
"He's nothing of the sort," said Psyche indignantly. "He's young and beautiful and kind, soft skin, firm muscles."
"What colour are his eyes?"
"Well, is he blonde or dark?"
"Darling sisters," said Psyche, "can you keep a secret?"
Calanthe and Zona craned in close and pawed their sister lovingly.
"Can we keep a secret? What a question!" "The thing is," said Psyche, "well, the thing is, I don't actually know what he looks like. I've never seen him, only, well, felt him."
"What?" Calanthe was shocked.
"You mean you've never so much as looked upon his face? He insists that I must not see him. He comes to me in the blackest dark of night, slips between the sheets, and we,
Psyche blushed.
"But I can trace his outlines, and what I feel is not the body of a monster, it is the body of a splendid and marvellous man. In the morning he has gone."
"Oh, you silly goose!" tittered Zona. "Don't you know—" She broke off here, as if afraid to go on. The sisters exchanged sorrowful and knowing glances.
"Oh, dear,
Psyche doesn't know," Calanthe responded with a sound that was something between a titter and a sigh. Psyche looked from one to the other in perplexity.
"Know what?"
Calanthe sat her down and explained, with Zona interposing her own observations and affirmations. "The worst and most dreadful monsters, indeed, the very kind that Apollo's oracle had predicted would devour her, possessed powers, always have done, were known for having, were celebrated the world over for having them. The power, for example, to transform themselves, to take on deceitful shapes, forms that might seem thrilling and attractive to the touch of a young girl, but this was only to win the trust of the innocent and foolish, so as one day to plant their demonic seed inside her. Poor girl, You don't understand these things, but men can do this, and cause you to give birth to a new abomination, an even more terrible monster, a mutation. It's how they breed, how they propagate their vile species. Psyche held up a hand.
Stop, please. I know you mean well, but you don't know how tender, how kind, how gentle.
That's their way. That's exactly their way.
Don't you see? If anything proves this monster's ferocious cruelty, it's this very tenderness and gentleness. A sure sign that it must be a hideous fiend.
Psyche thought of the new life growing inside her, and of her husband's insistence that she tell no one of it, and of his refusal ever to show himself. Oh dear, perhaps her sisters were right. They saw that she was wavering, and they pounced.
Here's what you do, my love. When he comes to you tonight, you allow him to have his beastly way with you,
ugh,
and then let him fall asleep. But you must stay awake. On all accounts, stay awake. When you're satisfied that he is absolutely fast asleep, you must rise and fetch a lamp and that razor that your handmaidens use to cut your hair. Yes, you'll need that. Light the lantern in the corner of the room and cover it so as not to wake him. Then steal over to the bed, lift your lantern, and slice his scaly dragon's neck. Saw away at his knotty veins. Kill him. Kill the beast. Then gather up all the gold and silver and the gemstones. That's most important.
And on the sisters talked until Psyche was fully persuaded. And so, that night, it came about that with Eros sleeping peacefully in the bed, Psyche found herself standing over him, a hooded lantern in one hand and a razor in the other. She raised the blinds from the lamp. Light fell on the curled-up, naked form of the most beautiful being she had ever beheld. The warm glow danced on smooth, youthful skin and on the most wonderful pair of feathered wings. Psyche could not hold back a gasp of amazement. She knew at once whom she was looking at. This was no dragon or monster, no ogre or abomination. This was the young god of love. This was Eros himself. To think that she could have dreamed of harming him. How beautiful he was. His full, rosy lips were slightly parted, and the sweetness of his breath came up to her as she leaned down to gaze more deeply. Everything about him was so perfect. The gentle heave and swell of muscles gave his youthful beauty a manly cast, but without that hard, bulging ungainliness she had seen on the body of her father's champion athletes and warriors. His tousled hair gleamed with a warm colour that lay between the gold of Apollo and the mahogany of Hermes. And those wings! Folded beneath his body, they had the fullness and whiteness of a swan's. She reached out a trembling hand and ran her finger down the line of feathers. The soft, fluttering whisper they returned hardly made a sound, yet it was enough to cause the sleeping Eros to shift and murmur. Psyche pulled back and shaded the lantern, but within a few moments an even, rhythmic breathing reassured her that Eros was still deeply asleep. She unmasked the lantern again and saw that he was now turned away from her. She saw, too, that his movement had caused a curious object to be brought into view. The lamplight fell on a silver cylinder that lay beneath his wings. His quiver. Hardly daring to breathe, Psyche leant forward and pulled out a single arrow. Turning it in her hand, she slowly fingered its shaft of shining ebony. The arrowhead itself was affixed by a band of gold. Holding the lantern high in her left hand, she ran her right thumb along the head, and then, ouch! So sharp was the tip that it drew blood. The moment it did, a feeling washed over her, a feeling of such intense love for the sleeping Eros, such heat, passion, and desire, such complete and eternal devotion that she could not refrain from moving to kiss the curls on the nape of his neck. Alas! As she did so, hot oil from the lantern dripped onto his right shoulder. He awoke with a yelp of pain, which, when he saw Psyche standing over him, grew into a great roar of disappointment and despair. His wings opened and began to beat the air. As he rose, Psyche launched herself forward and clung to his right leg, but his strength was too great, and he shook her off without a word and flew away into the night. The moment he left, everything fell apart. The walls of the palace rippled, faded, and dissolved into the night air. A despairing Psyche watched the gold columns around her shiver into a dark colonnade of trees, and the jeweled mosaic tiles beneath her feet churn into a mess of mud and gravel. Before long, palace, precious metals, precious stones, all had vanished. The sweet singing of the handmaidens turned into the howling of wolves and the screeching of owls, and the warm, mysterious perfumes whipped into chill and unrelenting winds.